ddnint.com, www.ddnint.com.
Which stands for?
Death Doula Network International. It's a mouthful.
It's Lynn Thompson here with Living on Purpose, and I'm so excited that for the January 7th Art of Departure, which is Art of Departure 7, we'll have Joanne Hahn and Karen Hendrickson with us. And I'm just talking to them ahead of time so we can kind of set the stage for them joining us. And so hi, Joanne, and hi, Karen. Who wants to go first talking about how did you meet each other and how did you get into the work that you're doing?
Karen and I have known each other for 25 years, I guess. We used to work in the same industry. So we got to become friends back in the 90s, I guess. And 2018, this world of death doula came to our attention, like just out of the blue kind of thing. It was brought to my attention during a telephone meditation because I wanted to transition. My background is as an insurance adjuster, helping people rebuild after they've lost their property. So grief, really. And I wanted to transition out of that. So this lady, we're on the phone and she says, I want you to write this down. What is that? She was death doula. I said, what is that? She goes, Google it. And then we went on to something else. So I get off the phone. I Googled it, send a note off to my friend Karen and said, check this out. So then Karen started doing some research and we learned more and more and more about what a death doula was. And I just kind of grew from there. I was honored to help a very good friend of mine transition in 2019, just after I'd learned about this death doula thing, and realized that there are a number of areas that people need help and support in, and that our medical system, as wonderful as it is, people are burnt out, and they really do need us to help. So that's kind of how we got into the death doula arena.
Yeah. So at the same time that Joanne was going through this kind of transition and this exploration, I was becoming more curious. And I also left the insurance industry to start my own independent coaching practice. You know, I'd been coaching for years in the industry that I was in the profession as an HR professional, but I wanted to do this independently. I felt also too that as I was learning more about this doula work, I was recognizing that oftentimes the barriers experienced in their lives and whatever area of their lives come from some place of loss. And I was intrigued about this death thing because death had been prevalent in my whole life in very different ways. And so I thought this is pretty cool. And then the more we unpeeled the layers on this and actually what this could mean for people in respect to personal agency, a really understanding choice, not allowing our healthcare system to lead, but to support us instead, in opening our own awareness around how much decision-making we could have with respect to our life journey and our end-of-life journey, acknowledging that death is our greatest teacher. That's my personal belief, is that death is our greatest teacher if we pay attention. We allow ourselves to be in the vulnerability and the sacredness of it, and we recognize our own mortality, then it can call us to live life a little bit differently if we choose and pay attention. And so, you know, here we are. We started doing some work together in the respect of community education, getting out into our local communities and talking about the role of a death doula, the importance of advanced care planning, why people should have conversations. And then Joanne and I live like 4 hours apart, right? So it was difficult for us to actually actively do that together in community for any sort of sustainable time. And so we started doing some of this work individually, right, Jo? Mm-hmm. And then in early 2020, we were really starting to create some community engagement locally within our local areas. And in March, the world shut down, 2020, because a result of COVID. And so we sat on a call like this, just the two of us saying, what the freak do we do now? We were feeling so hopeful about the plans and what was going to come and the impact we were going to make. And then it was stopped. And so we very quickly thought, well, that maybe we could do something online. So we quickly mastered Zoom, figured out how to create events online. And we started with Seriously Let's Talk.
Yeah, series of conversations. Yeah.
Yeah. And we, at that time, had just become the Canadian distributor for the Death Deck, which is a tool for communications. And we thought, well, let's just bring people together and use the Death Deck. That's what we did.
Online.
Yeah. By the beginning of April, we were running with this Seriously Let's Talk with the Death Deck. And we were kind of having fun and people were eating it up. In June, Reimagine reached out to us and asked us if we would put together a four-part series that we could do through the Reimagine Love, Life, and Loss. I can't remember what it was called at that time, but we said, yeah, sure, we'd do that. And then by July, we'd been hearing so many people tell us they needed community.
And so Karen and I did a little bit of research to see what was out there for support for people that had already taken their doula training. We couldn't find any. So we said, build it and they will come or not. So in August of 2020, we launched, at that time, it was called the Death Doula Network of BC. It's a membership-based community. And we started gathering members. And in 2023, this year, we changed the name to Death Doula Network International to reflect the membership base that we have, which is all over the world.
And what we kept hearing was that people were so grateful to have this opportunity to come together and learn. We host a monthly workshop for our members. We host a monthly Dishing with the Doulas, which is just anybody can come. But recognizing that even beyond those that are interested in this death caring space, so beyond doulas and funeral directors and celebrants and those people, our communities, whether they openly and consciously acknowledge it or not, want to have these conversations. They want to gain a comfort with their mortality. They want to gain more agency. They want to be less fearful, even if they don't realize consciously that they do. It's what we see.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I mean, it reflects what's been happening on the Art of Departure series, is people pretty much every time somebody comments like, this is so great to have this space to talk about it. And the Death Deck, yeah, has been featured. We had Lisa, one of the originators of it. Yeah, she was on the call. I have an extra deck through how that all worked out with getting it from you guys. Yeah, so yeah, this would be a good opportunity to have a draw. So that would be fun.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And we'd be happy to support that, actually, because, you know, we can provide.
Oh, thanks. Sure. So possibly then part of January 7th, then we could pull out some cards, right? Have some conversations, and then you guys can maybe give some insights too from, you know, into those discussions. That would be awesome.
Yeah. And then, so just for my clarity then, this January 7th, is really just conversation, right? With whoever shows up. Lovely.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Let me get this set up as a little podcast intro. And it also will include a link to Art of Departure 5. And in the show notes for Art of Departure 5, it has the links to all the other ones before it. So then, you know, people can listen to as much or as little as they want to get a sense of it.
So this is exciting. Thank you for the opportunity. Yeah.
And thank you, Joanne and Karen. And, well, I am curious, is this your main job, or like, what do you do now that you're not insurance agents anymore?
The bulk of my time goes to the network. I do a lot of the workshop development and speak with the speakers and all that kind of stuff. I also have a private death doula practice, and I'm a volunteer with Dying with Dignity Canada, Made Family Support Society, and Bridge C14, all in support of medical assistance in dying. I do educational sessions to help people understand better what MADE is all about, because there's so many misconceptions out there.
Well, there's some new stuff coming forward for March, right? Supposed to be. So definitely let's include conversation about that. That's going to be very timely. Yes.
Yeah, Karen and I are both big proponents on MADE and trying to dispel all of the myths and misunderstandings. And advanced care planning too. We do a lot of education around the importance of advanced care planning and having conversations about what you want or what you don't want for treatment if you can't speak for yourself.
Perfect. Yeah. No, these are all really helpful topics. So yeah.
And then Karen's a coach.
I take care of a lot of the admin and the public facing communication part of the network. And I have a coaching practice. And within that coaching practice, I also do doula work as well too. But most of my time is now around actually coaching new doulas, emerging doulas, or those that are interested in trying to find a space in this landscape. You know, we're just sort of re-pioneering things here, right? So,
yeah, interesting. So like a training program is what you're saying?
A group mentorship program is what I offer. Yeah, which is, it's not like doula training. I've done training, but how do I convert this into a business? How do I convert this into a revenue generating practice, right? Through that process, I infuse my coaching expertise, but also my business development background in that as well. And sometimes through the process, people recognize, you know, I'd love to be a doula, but I don't want to be an entrepreneur in doing that, right? So some people learn that and recognize that the best thing they can do is to find a collective within their community that maybe they can subcontract with somebody or what have you. Or this ultimate big vision for me is that we know that there's this desire for standardized education and standardized scope of practice and having it embedded into our healthcare system. And I think on many levels, that's a great concept and a great idea, but it's also very risky, in my opinion, because I believe that there are many roles within our healthcare system today that started out with a real intention about on patient-centered care, like social workers, like hospices. And in fact, over time, what happens is the needs and the desires of the system overtake the needs and the wishes of the people that they're in service to. And so it's part of the reason why our role is so valuable today. It's not the whole reason, but it's part of the reason why we have so many gaps in relation to this patient-centered approach to care. So, you know, some people would like it to be that, right? Where I could be a doula and I can get paid from my health authority and make $35 an hour and just be close to the people. And then other people realize, wow, you know, there really is something here I could leverage on, but it's going to take a lot of work. And right now, the investment in a lot of ways is educating community about the role, about why talking about death is important. And it's why we get excited every time we hear of somebody like you that's driving these conversations, right? And leading these conversations.
Well, that's great, Karen. Thank you for that. And yeah, I think about it like every day. I have my important papers that I keep updating and my people I keep communicating with. And I'm grateful every day I wake up, you know, oh, I get to still be here. Oh, what can we do now and next? So, Joanne, I just want to come back to you briefly. Like, this has been a topic about made in conversation recently. And can you just give us one or two myths that you would expand on to dispel? Or is that a lot to ask?
It's funny. I just had this conversation with a colleague of mine an hour ago, right? And I was telling her that I received a message from a good friend of mine, and she said, I need your help. My brother is an alcoholic and he's depressed, and his daughter wants him to apply for MAID. And I went, oh, well, just so you know, if those are the only two conditions he has and there's no underlying medical condition, he's not going to qualify. And she said, oh my gosh, thank you so much for letting me know. I also do some work with an organization out of Vernon, BC, that helps advocate for seniors and helps them do paperwork and apply for grants and all that kind of stuff. She got in touch with me and she said, I've had two people in the past month come to me from Veterans Affairs who were told, the condensed version is, they were told that if you can't afford to live, you might want to apply for MAID. There's those kind of remarks that are being made out in the public. And it's no wonder that people think of MAID as a way out. But there's a lot of safeguards and steps that you have to go through, as I'm sure you know, Lynn, that it's not just a matter of saying, okay, I'm done, I want to end my life. There's criteria that has to be met and there's safeguards and all kinds of things. People need to understand that.
Well, yeah, I looked at a site that shows you, you know, how to apply. And I'm just going, oh, this is really intense. But what I've heard about what's coming up in March 2024, which I guess the last updates were a year before that, right? In March 2023, from what I was reading. So it sounds, though, like mental health might become one of the criteria. Is that true?
Mm-hmm. It's being considered at this time.
Yeah. However, right? However, they're now referencing it as a mental disorder. And again, there will be very rigid, strict eligibility criteria. an individual, from my understanding, from some of my research that I've done through the CAMAP. Are you familiar with CAMAP, Lynn, which is the Canadian Association of MAID Assessors and Providers? This is where a lot of the doctors and the nurse practitioners are engaged in a lot of conversation, that when it comes to this, the mental disorder being a eligible criteria, underlying criteria in that is, in fact, that the individual has had to have suffered for multitudes of years and years with different interventions and treatments and programs or processes to support their well-being before they would even be considered. So it's not a matter, I've been depressed for 6 months and I want MAID. It's not that simplistic. Part of the challenge with this piece that potentially will come forward is that we have regarded political officials out communicating inaccurate information.
Yes.
Right, about intention and process. And this is what happens in community. This is why Joe and I are so committed to this piece on MAID and helping people to understand, right? It's because we know that unless you're going to the right sources for all of the information, we're likely being misled.
Yeah. And we want to help people understand the process too. So Karen and I both do some volunteer work with Bridge C14, an organization out of Toronto. I do the peer-to-peer support for people considering MAID. And I was in a session with some, I think there was three of them. And they had a lot of questions about the process and how do I do this? And at the end of our 1 hour session, this lady said, I have been researching MAID and how to do it and what it's all about for the last 6 months. She said, and I've learned more from you in this 1 hour than I have been able to find on my own. Mm-hmm. So we want to make it easier for people to understand so they get the correct information and how to apply for it and make them aware that there are safeguards, there are procedures. It's not just easy. So we're trying to help them understand the process and get there a little bit easier and then make a decision, because MAID's not for everybody. It's an option. It's an option that out here where I am in Kelowna, the medical staff doesn't offer up to the patients. The patient has to ask about it. My issue with that is, well, how do you ask about something you don't know about? Because not everybody's aware of it.
Well, and if they can't offer it, are they able to offer information if they're asked by the patient?
Yes, yes. Okay. But they have to be asked first. So, you know, the response that I got from the head of the palliative team here was that, well, it's in the news, it's on the internet. Well, you know what? I don't read the news. Not everybody has a computer. We believe that people need to be aware of their options, and then they can make an educated decision.
Joe and I say that, you know, we're not here to encourage or discourage people to access MAID. But what we do believe in is that every individual who has a desire, right, shouldn't be prohibited from accessing the process.
Yeah, I'm concerned about how it's sliding. And if somebody hasn't heard about it at all, and then they hear that it's mm-hmm. it's for people who have a chronic condition, no hope of recovery, imminent death, that's one thing, rather than wasting away and just waiting for something to take them out and not able to kill themselves if they want to. I mean, it's sort of like a more sanctioned suicide. It's like it's help with leaving. Is that a stretch to call it sanctioned suicide? I don't know.
I would say so.
Yeah.
My personal belief is that, yeah, I would say so. Because inevitably, these individuals ultimately have their life will be limited either through their chronic illness or their terminal illness today.
Okay. So what I heard, and you can help me with this, is that I heard that infants can be considered for MAID. That's not true?
Minors, no.
So there is another extension that has been discussed, which relates to mature minors, right? Mm-hmm. But there's nothing in the current considerations with respect to MAID that relate to anybody being able to make that decision for a minor.
Okay, I'm really relieved to hear that, because I saw that somewhere and I went, whoa. Mm-hmm.
That's some misinformation that's being put out there.
Mm-hmm. And actually, I sat in a presentation here with some local MLAs. One particular MLA actually suggested to the audience that, in fact, that this what you're saying is exactly what will happen.
Mm-hmm. Maybe I misread it, and that was what was being implied, that the more we go down this road, the more it could be sliding into something that is not what was intended at all.
Yeah.
So
I don't think you misread it, Lynn, because there's a number of people out there that are of the same opinion. That's, you know, the information they're being fed, if you will.
I don't want to keep coming back to these political leaders, but it distresses me to know that political leaders in the lobbying for their positions are misleading, right? There's MLA out here, Ed Fast is his name. He had a public members bill that he tried to get through Parliament that would block any further expansion of MAID. And he was actually one of the speakers at the session that I sat in, suggesting that I'm depressed because my dog died, and so I can access MAID, and nobody can prohibit me from doing that. And so, you know, this is where let's understand the full gamut of what this process looks like. And so let's be transparent in the truth and the realities. And I would hope that our government officials were doing that, but that's not the case. So
it could be one of the concerns that somebody has, you know, just selective, you know, so like who gets to live. And there has been reports of people being said, well, you know, you're having this trouble. Have you considered MAID, right? Like it just becoming more and more common as an option, as a way out. You know, I just think of the whole arc of our lives, you know, moving through challenges. And without seeing the other side of that challenge, are we denying ourselves the opportunity to rise above and to find meaning and purpose in life, rather than preempt that opportunity by applying and qualifying for a way out? I know everybody's situation would be different, but it's a big topic, and I really appreciate talking about it.
Yeah, yes. For sure it is. Right? I mean, I also think too, you know, the waters get muddied in relation to some of this mental disorder piece, because there are many individuals out there in the world today who are suffering as a result of mental health. Right. And they're suffering unnecessarily, I'm going to say, because we have such limited resource and access to resources that can make a difference. I mean, we know of individuals who have died by suicide and have been very clear in what they've left behind, that the reason they opted for suicide was because our healthcare systems kept telling them they could look after themselves. Right. And you know, we know that, you know, if you're waiting for a psychiatrist or any of these other kinds of supports, that sometimes it's months before you can get access, if at all, depending on where you are in community. And so there's so many factors within the systems that really muddy all of these waters when you're not talking about life-limiting illness, for sure.
Exactly. Yeah. That is like such a different thing.
Yeah.
We have a workshop specifically for doulas supporting people through MAID, to help them understand, because it's a different kind of death, right? It's a disenfranchised kind of thing where nobody wants to talk about it because, you know, it's like a drug overdose or a suicide. People don't want to know about that. So we've done that.
And Joe did write a blog for us on our guest blog on our website about her experience in supporting a good friend through the MAID process.
What's going to happen in March? Is it new legislation? Is that what's happening?
Supposed to be, yep.
They're supposed to be moving forward with the criteria and the access for mental disorder.
Which has changed, just so you know, Lynn. It used to be a mental illness, and now it's being called mental disorder.
You guys are so close to this evolving story.
Appreciate the opportunity to get some information out there.
For sure. Well, to be continued, Joanne Hahn and Karen Hendrickson, thank you for being on Living on Purpose for a little intro ahead of January 7th, 2024.
Well, that's perfect, then. Thank you so much.